Costa Cat, and welcome to the 28th episode of Frequency Resonance Radio. Today is Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2017 EV. Currently, it is 22:10 Eastern Standard Time. I am aware that there's been quite a gap between right now and the last time I released an episode, but in any case, I'm going to try to get on to an actual decent schedule, so on to the show. Let's begin with, given that there's been quite a few things, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, in the space between last time and today, I'm going to start with a lighter story. Donald Trump, earlier today, coined a brand new word to describe something related to the media, and a lot of people seem to not know what it is. It's, in a tweet at midnight, he said, "Despite the constant negative press confeffa," he deleted it very quickly. And it became a trending topic. And Trump himself said, "Who can figure out the true meaning of confeffa? Enjoy!" Seems that he was trying to say coverage, but people still don't know what he was actually trying to say. It might have been something about Jared Kushner and his alleged Russian communications channel proposal. It might have been something entirely different, but all we really know is that he said confeffa, and nobody's entirely sure exactly what he was really trying to refer to. I suggested that if you convert it to Hebrew letters and then turn that into gematria, then it adds up to 157, which can mean a lot of things. It could refer to the Ofanim, it can refer to crucifixion or raising up. It could mean anything, honestly. So perhaps that's what Trump had in mind, maybe. So here. Another thing. Here's a really, really good story. Chelsea Manning was finally released from prison a couple weeks ago. Finally. She was released 2 weeks ago on the 17th of May. My God, this is just so damn great. The UN described her penal conditions as torture. She was released. She had released a vast trove of state secrets, including the collateral murder video that proved that the United States had committed war crimes, including double tap in Iraq. She tweeted at a picture of herself in Converse sneakers, and then a nice pizza. And my God. Also, she's gorgeous. I have to point that out. She is absolutely freaking gorgeous. You need to see the photo that she tweeted out of herself just being gorgeous. She is utterly beautiful. The picture itself is Creative Commons license, so you can use it. CC by SA, just like this show. She said in a statement a couple hours after release, "After another anxious 4 months of waiting, the day has finally arrived. I am looking forward so much. Whatever is ahead of me is far more important than the past. I'm figuring things out right now, which is exciting, awkward, fun, and all new for me." Yep, her 7-year ordeal has seen her held captive in Iraq, Kuwait, and US, always in male-only detention facilities. She waged a relentless legal battle to be respected as a transgender woman, winning the right to receive hormone treatment, but still being subjected to male standard hair length and dress codes. Obama had granted her clemency, not pardon. He had commuted her sentence in his final days in office in January. Her sentence was 35 years long. It was the largest ever penalty dished out to an official leaker. He said that justice had been served. I have to disagree. Justice had not been served, because if it had been served, she wouldn't have been in prison in the first place, first of all. He could have pardoned her instead of commuted her. He could have pardoned her before she got into prison. In any case, her conviction remains in place, and as a result, her active military status. Her lawyers are continuing to appeal her conviction, which means that there is a fundraiser. I'm going to link to that in the description. It's sponsored by Reporters Without Borders, Courage, and Code Pink. Oh, and the Wow Holland Foundation. So, there's some much worse news as well. There was a bombing in Manchester. A few days ago. It was on the 22nd. It was a suicide bombing with a nail bomb against a concert by Ariana Grande. Trump referred to the bomber as an evil loser, and I have to concur. This was primarily an attack against children. You have to remember that. It was a nail bomb attack against children, so yeah, that is both evil and the action of a loser. 23 adults and children, including Abadi, were killed. Salman Abadi was the bomber. 116 were injured. So, it was the deadliest attack in the United Kingdom since the 7th of July 2005 bombings in London. It resulted in, of course, obviously, Theresa May raising the terror threat level to critical, the highest level, until 27th of May, when it was reduced to severe. And she activated Operation Temporar, allowing up to 5,000 soldiers to reinforce armed police and protecting parts of the country. They deployed troops to guard government buildings in London. That basically, all that really did was reinforce why, it didn't reinforce why terrorism works. It just proved that terrorism works. It proved that terrorism works because the UK immediately started authoritarian measures to deal with the aftermath. Instead of actual investigative work and policing, there were also leaks to the press from America. 16 people have been arrested, of whom 11 remained in police custody. Yeah, there it is. Abadi's name and other information given confidentially to security services in the United States and France were leaked to the news media. That was within hours of the attack. This led to condemnation from Home Secretary Amber Rudd. So, following the publication of crime scene photographs of the backpack bomb used in the attack on the 24th of May edition of the New York Times, UK counter-terror police chiefs said that the release of the material was, of course, detrimental to the investigation. All it could have done was allow whoever the co-conspirators were to know how far the investigation was going. That is one form of leaking that I'll say is not a good form of leaking. So, there was also another terrorist attack. But before that, let's talk a bit about something that is not being covered enough, Marawi. Ever since May 2017, there has been an ongoing attack by Daesh against Marawi in the state of Lanao del Sur. Sorry, not the state, the province of Lanao del Sur in the Philippines. Martial law has been declared in the Mindanao region for 60 days. The Philippines government, supported by the Moro National Liberation Front and the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, which were originally belligerents against, which are normally belligerents against the government, they've joined up to take on Daesh. The entire city is under siege by Daesh. Martial law has been declared there in the Mindanao region for 60 days. There are only 450-500 Daesh militants. It appears that 21 government forces members have been killed, 61 have been wounded, 89 Daesh militants were killed, 8 were captured. 19 civilians were killed. 180,000 were evacuated, but 760 were displaced. It may be described as a battle. It appears that, according to the Philippine government, the clashes began when they launched an offensive in the city to capture Isnilon Hapilon, leader of the Abu Sayyaf group, which is sort of a province of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, aka Daesh. After receiving reports that Hapilon was in the city, possibly to meet with militants of the Maute group. The Maute group is another Daesh-related organization that calls itself the Islamic State of Lanao. A firefight had erupted when Hapilon's forces opened fire at the combined army and police teams and called for reinforcements from the Maute group, which, as I mentioned, has also pledged allegiance to Daesh, and who are believed to be responsible for the 2016 Davao City bombing. So this is one of the largest terrorist operations that has taken place in the Philippines. Dear God, I'm making mistakes like Sean Spicer today. In any case, it appears that the preliminaries to this particular problem have been going on since February 2016, when the Maute group established a stronghold in Lanao del Sur and is blamed for the 2016 Davao City bombing and two attacks in Butig in Lanao del Sur, a town located south of Marawi. The government had downplayed the threat of Daesh in the Philippines since 2013, when it was founded, and following the February 2016 Butig clash with the Maute group, then President Aquino III said that the Islamic State has no presence in the country and that the militant group was only composed of mercenaries, trying to make their presence felt in order for them to attract attention from Daesh supporters in the Middle East. The Abu Sayyaf group, headed by Isnilon Habilon, who is listed as among the world's most wanted terrorists by the State Department with a reward of up to $5 million for his capture, was also blamed for deadly bombings and kidnappings in the past, including the abduction and subsequent beheading of Canadian businessman John Ridsdell. So, Aquino disclosed in 2016, after John Ridsdell was beheaded, that there had been threats against him from the jihadi group, and that Abu Sayyaf also plotted to kidnap his sister Chris and Mani Pacquiao in order to catch the attention of Daesh. Duterte confirmed the Maute group's links with Daesh, although the Philippine military maintained that Daesh had not established links in the Philippines. I'm not a big fan of Duterte. He's a pretty much a mass murderer. He's waging cleansing of drug users, which is never a good thing. But I do have to say that him actually saying a good thing, I have to commend him with reservations, of course, for having actually stated the truth about Daesh. Although he followed that up after November 2016 and December 2016 by daring the Maute group to attack Marawi, saying, "Because they threaten to go down from the mountains to burn down Marawi, go ahead, be my guest, we will wait for you there, no problem." And that was not a smart move. That was definitely not a smart move. It would be a smart move if he can actually finish this group off effectively and quickly. That would actually give him better international cachet after his repeated murder of drug users and drug dealers, and his thing about, you know, promising to legalize gay marriage and then backing off from that. He's a really weird guy. That's all I can say. He's a really fucking weird guy. There was also another terrorist attack in the United States. This time it was in Portland. Two people were stabbed and murdered, and one was stabbed and injured, because this guy, Jeremy Christian, had been attempting to rant at and was apparently threatening a couple of Muslim girls. So this guy was charged with two counts of aggravated murder, one count of attempted murder, two counts of second-degree intimidation, and one count of being a felon in possession of a restricted weapon. It's ridiculous. I went through his Facebook page because it was still up. It was still open. And he had really weird contradictory positions. He supported Sanders to an extent, saying that he would be better than Hillary Clinton. He hated Hillary Clinton with a passion. He said that Sanders would have been better than Clinton. I concur with him on that, but God, no. He repeatedly described himself as a nihilist. Also posted a whole bunch of racist things, as well as a share this image to make racists angry thing, which was weird. He also hated Muslims. He didn't like black people that much. He talked about being Aryan. He talked about being pro-Hitler. He talked about he attended an anti-Antifa rally. That was one of his main obsessions. He really, really hated Antifa. He saw them as haters of free speech and haters of white America, and he saw illegal immigration as a huge threat. He, dear God, he became overridingly obsessed with Antifa. He attended an anti-Antifa rally, one of those free speech rallies. Yeah, at which he gave the Nazi salute. 35 years old. His full legal name is Jeremiah Joseph Christian. As soon as he walked into the courtroom, he yelled, "Free speech or die, Portland. You got no safe place. This is America. Get out if you don't like free speech." The public defender spoke to the judge and he signed some documents. Just before he walked out of the courtroom, he said, "Death to the enemies of America. Leave this country if you hate our freedom. Death to Antifa. You call it terrorism. I call it patriotism. You hear me die." He stabbed two men in de to death and injured another man badly aboard a Portland metro train. Taliesin Mirdin Namkhay Meche, 23, and Ricky John Best, 53, died after confronting him for alleged, not allegedly, he almost, he definitely did this. He harassed a black 16-year-old girl and her Muslim friend who was wearing a hijab. Micah David Cole Fletcher, let's see, Taliesin Mirdin Namkhay Meche or Meche. This guy was an economist, a very recent graduate, an economist. Ricky John, he was a lefty economist. Ricky John Best was a conservative veteran. Both of them heroes. Micah David Cole Fletcher also got involved. He was stabbed in the neck, but he was released late Monday night, thankfully, and attended the Tuesday court hearing. So he was okay. Here's the thing. Looking at his Facebook profile, it's easy and clear to conclude that he was insane. But does that prevent him from being a terrorist? Not at all. He was also a terror. He is also a terrorist. He is insane and he is also a terrorist. Those things are not mutually exclusive. He was clearly not crazy enough to be prevented from knowing what he was doing. He clearly knew what he was doing, and he meant it. He still thinks that he is a patriot for having killed people who tried to prevent him from harassing a Muslim girl and her black friend. It's difficult because terrorist usually means that the perpetrator is a Muslim. But the thing is that he is a terrorist. And you know what? I want to suggest something. That the fact that he was a terrorist means that we can gain some information on the motivations of terrorism by looking at this man personally. Breivik was crazy. Look at his manifesto. He was fucking nuts. Unabomber was crazy. Look at his manifesto. He was nuts too. But the thing is that both of them were also crazy, and yet they were also terrorists. Being crazy still does not preclude you from being a terrorist. I'll bet you anything that young Muslims who get attracted to joining Daesh, young Muslims who want to become suicide bombers, have much more in common with Jeremy Christian and Anders Behring Breivik than they do with the majority of Muslims, just as Jeremy Christian had much more in common with Muslim terrorists than with normal white people or normal pagans, just like Anders Breivik had much more in common with Muslim terrorists than who both of them, of course, hated. Narcissism of small differences right there than with normal Norwegians or normal cultural Christians, as he put it. It is clear to see that these people hated women, they hated non-whites, and they hated other people. It is clear to see that Muslim terrorists hate women, hate non-Muslims, and hate other people, regardless of their backgrounds. It's clear to see just based on the fact that the largest targets of Islamic terrorism have been primarily other Muslims. It is clear to see this from the fact that the largest that Breivik's targets were white Norwegians. Jeremy Christian's targets, although he started intimidating a black girl and her Muslim friend, were white Americans. So, this is the thing. He was crazy, and he was a terrorist. His rage morphed into terrorism. And because the ideology that is prevalent, organized from top down, and filtered through the media and through popular culture, is that Muslims are evil, and non-whites are violent, and that women are inferior, he acted on this ideology which he internalized, and he was a terrorist. That's the thing. You can't tell me that he wasn't a terrorist, just as you can't tell me that Salman Abedi was a terrorist. Look at Salman Abedi. Look at who he targeted. He targeted young girls. Why did he target young girls? A lot of Muslim countries exhibit a disdain for women in their official policies. And he likely internalized this ideology. And if we can guess that his psychology was much more similar to Jeremy Christian's and Anders Behring Breivik's, then we can conclude that he was a violently unstable misogynist who targeted young women just because they were non-Muslim and, almost definitely more importantly, women. Luckily, there was one survivor of the terrorist attack. Micah Fletcher, as I mentioned, survived. He said, "I got stabbed in the neck on my way to work randomly by a stranger I don't know for trying to be a nice person." Like, I don't know what to do after that, you know. I'm healing, that's what I'm doing, as much as I can in whatever way I can. He won a citywide poetry slam in high school for a poem that spoke up out against Islamophobia. He said that Portland can only heal from it if its citizens come together to assure that the city is a place where people can feel safe again. He said, "We're about to go through a very hard time. Things are happening. The world is changing. We need to remember that this is supposed to be a city where people can be safe, where children can play, where laughter can grow, and where love can take its roots in the soil. It's going to take us standing together as a community if you want that to be the Portland we live in." He said, "Two very good people lost their lives that day. I'm very injured, both physically and mentally. I do not feel well, and I mourn the loss of those two very brave individuals who put their lives on the line like that. I wish their families as much healing as they can in these times of its immense trials and tribulations." Two people came to his aid after he was stabbed. He said he owes those people his life. He said he was also helped by community support. Once his medical and recovery bills are covered, he will donate the rest of the money raised on his behalf to the families of Best and Nam Kai Mecha. He said, "I don't want a profit off this. I want any money once the medical bills are paid off. I want the money to go to the families of the people that lost their lives that day." His injury missed being fatal by millimeters. Dear God, wow. Jeremy Christian had a 3.5-inch folding knife in his pocket. He opened it and swung, stabbing Fletcher in the neck. He grabbed his neck to stop the bleeding and got off the train. Holy crap. Missed being fatal by millimeters. He was released from the hospital on Monday night. 2 nights ago, his Portland State University president Wim Weibel said Micah's family and friends report that he is getting better every day, and he was able to give a thumbs up from the hospital over the weekend in a photo the family shared with the media. So I am going to link to the fundraiser for this guy below, just like the fundraiser to overturn Chelsea Manning's conviction, because there is no that way that this guy should not get the money that he needs. There is no way that the family should not get the money that they need either. So on that note, our monthly meditation, as recommended by Rudolf Steiner, is Perseverance Becomes Faithfulness. So thank you for listening, everyone. Hopefully this was an amazing show. Don't forget to patronize me on Patreon or donate with PayPal or DonorBox. Please tune in either tomorrow or Friday. So good night and love and light.